In these two lists of dependent arising that we're talking about, as we get to the near the end, but not the end, of the liberative dependent arising, we come to what's often called liberation. And going backwards on the ordinary dependent arising, the second to the first is sankhara, a Pali word that I like to translate it as constructions. It has other good translations as well. It can be often conditions, formations as popular, mental formations, fabrications. So these correspond to each other, and these holding these two lists next to each other. The constructions that our mind constructs, and liberation. I think I most appreciate the translation of vimutti, liberation. I like release. Release speaks for me closer to something is untied, loosened, set free. And it has it's a very kind of positive feeling, the idea of release. Liberation, of course, is a nice thing. But release has more sense of movement in my mind, movement of out into the fresh air, like a bird that's maybe been held at a shelter and being cared for and maybe was injured. And then at some point, it's released. And this beautiful image of the bird taking off and up into the air and the sky. I like release because it's a sound similar to the expression new lease, a new lease on life. With liberation, with release, there's kind of a new lease, a new opportunity, a new permission, maybe, to live a different way. So the ordinary is the karmic. Description of the karmic conditions that lead up to full-blown suffering. The liberative are the dharmic conditions that lead to full-blown liberation. Release. And it's a very dramatic, I think, distinction to make between the karmic and the dharmic streams. But it's important not to confuse this with necessarily two different ways of living. In both streams, ordinary human life goes on. Go to sleep, wake up, have food to eat, maybe go to work, talk to people, walk around, take care of responsibilities, all kinds of things. The difference is how they're done. So it's not a rejection of life, one way, but it's a discovery of a new way, or it's laying out two options of how to live that ordinary life, how to go about. The karmic life is one that is based on constructions, formations, dispositions. It's in the way these lists are made up, they kind of repeat themselves. So the constructions are all the ones from craving, starting at craving, compulsion, becoming, birth, and now that wonderful list: grief, lamentation, despair, and anguish. Those are all constructions, and they're all conditions. And one of the features of this is that they are conditions. Each of them and the sum total are conditions for creating more of the same. So constructions are constructed so they can construct some more. But this process is not so personal, except that it's happening to each of us. But the emphasis here is on not cause and not the person who causes these things, but rather the conditions that are in place, necessary conditions. And the idea of you being the agent who does all this is removed from the discussion. So it's not a teaching of taking personal responsibility or blame for all these conditions and constructions, but it is a teaching to learn about them and to see them. Suffering is often a big black box. Don't understand why we suffer. But to go through, start to kind of seeing, observing, the conditions operating, to be able to recognize them, then we begin to see, oh, it's all happening. So some ways it happens impersonally. Some ways these things appear, and when they appear, they set the conditions for something else to appear. And it's a very different orientation than the orientation where we look at life through the lens of me, myself, and mine. It's all about me and what I do, my responsibility, my blame, my victimhood, my whatever the opposite of victim is, my. And and it's not like it does hit, lets us off the hook entirely. But it is a breath of fresh air that the burden and the weight of carrying with us these strong ideas and compulsions around self and what it means to be a self and what self needs and wants and the judgments we have about ourselves. Those are all constructions. They are all conditions. And the way that these conditions are worked with in Buddhist practice is also through conditions. We create supportive conditions for the stream to go in a different way. If you remember at the beginning of the retreat, I made the example of the fist that wouldn't unclench until someone comes along and holds it in a soft palm and supports it. And then maybe it relaxes. So that's offering a condition, a supporting condition for a different outcome, different direction. So a lot of Buddhist practice is not about causing things to happen, but putting in conditions in place so things begin to loosen up, soften, and release. So this retreat has been a condition. And many of the features of the retreat and many of the aspects of the practice that you put in place here have created conditions that were very different if you'd spend the 2 weeks at Disneyland. And some of the benefit we get on retreat, turns out it isn't so much what you cause to happen after all. The biggest responsibility you can take is that you stayed in the retreat, in the container. The container supports something. And something begins to relax, let go, unwind, show itself. It's a wonderful condition that we live under. And then we support that condition further. We meditate. We meditate in ways that allow the constructions to relax and to thaw and to soften. So most ordinary life is karmic. Constructed parts of our being propel, evoke, give birth to all kinds of other constructions, some of them which are not so helpful, healthy. And it's a kind of perpetual emotion machine, or constant cycles of rebirth, moment by moment, day by day. But it begins, kind of one of part of the starting points is sankharas, constructions. The corresponding part in the liberative list is liberation, release. And once there's some sense, some glimpse of release, a person can understand that there can be a different foundation for how we live our life. That the starting point for how we live is the mind that's released. The starting point doesn't have to be the constructions, the karmic momentum. The beginning, the source, the foundation, the origin for how we, what we do, what we say, what we think, even what we feel, can arise out of the fountainhead or the spring of liberation. We live our life with the hand clenched. It's pretty limited what that hand can do. But when the hand is open, released, the fist has been released, There's a lot more that the hand can do. The hand, the palm of the hand, is much more sensitive than the back of the hand, much softer. When your friend is distressed and you place your fist on their shoulder, it might be nice. But when you put the open palm, you put your open palm on their shoulder, it probably has a different effect. So to begin appreciating release is to understand that at least initially it's a theory, maybe, or a guess, that it's possible to live this way, unfisted. It's possible to live without attachment and clinging and becoming. It's possible to live without the compulsions of our, these drives of greed, hate, and delusion operating. It's an appreciation, understanding that it's simply not worthwhile to continue going about asserting a becoming, pushing the self agenda, playing this massive collective theater that we're all kind of playing with our costumes and our mannerisms and gestures and all these parts that we play for the theater of our life when we are asserting an identity, asserting how we think we should be or need to be. Or some people play the part really well of rebelling against all the what they should do and the rules. But that's another construction, another becoming. But what if you step into a situation, any situation in life, and you decide, because you know something about release, you decide, I'm going to do this one without clinging to anything, without the compulsion propelling me to be a certain way without trying to prove or defend or hold on to an identity. What if I just show up without any attachment, any clinging? And that's when the lawyers of the mind come along to say, well, I don't think Gil understands my life. And what's, you know, the problem with a little bit of attachment after all? It's innocent enough. Or it's not possible to defend myself, protect myself, unless I'm somehow attached and clinging. All kinds of arguments will come about why it's necessary to cling and grasp and become. And it's a little bit sad, or very sad, tragic. It's a tragic play. Because it creates more of the same. It creates more attachment, more clinging, more fragility. If attachment and craving and becoming are an ouch, they create more ouch. But there's a new becoming, a new lease in life that release provides. That can seem scary at first. Can feel like you're naked or undefended. As if you don't know what to do. If you don't, you know, you have to plan ahead, don't you? For everything, figure out all the options and strategies, and you can't just show up and not have a plan or not have but there is a remarkable thing is that in most situations you don't really have to bring much with you. It's okay to come released. It's okay to come with an open hand, an empty hand. It's okay to come without having clung to anything first. And then see what's possible. Discover what unfolds. And slowly to learn the art, slowly to learn how to allow what we say and do and even think to emerge out of the empty space created by the release. You're still going to have physical needs, you're going to have emotions, you're going to have thoughts, ideas, all kinds of things will be pretty much the same as before. But you don't have to be the director of the play anymore. It doesn't have to be theater anymore. It can just be a response to the situation you're in. Trusting the response, trusting yourself. And one of the things to trust, and I think is more important, it's more important to trust that it's not worthwhile clinging than it is to trust that you'll know what to do. Because maybe you won't know. And maybe it's okay. I wonder how much speech people speak does not need to be said. So at some point we come to a juncture in our life where it becomes clear that one direction is to continue with the usual constructions. And the other is to offer our life in the, put our life in the dharmic stream. To begin trusting, non-clinging, non-grasping, non-compulsion. No compulsion around identity. No attachment to identity. No clinging to self. No clinging to being alive. No clinging to being dead. Just alive. Alive and free. Alive and at ease. One of the reference points or associations I have with liberation, one of manifestation of it, is a sense of ease. Ease seems to me more ordinary and normal than peace. And perhaps liberation, the dharmic stream, doesn't have to be so extraordinary. Maybe you stop becoming extraordinary. Maybe it's, you don't become the great Buddhist saint on your block with medallions that you wear on your chest to show how enlightened you are. But rather, you become rather ordinary. Because there's nothing to prove, nothing to be, beyond responding appropriately to the situation. In some ways, a karmic life is a life where the constructed self asserts itself. Sometimes, pushing oneself forward into the world and sometimes retreating. Sometimes the constructed self is one of I'm special, and sometimes the constructed self is one that says I'm nothing special, I'm lousy. Delusions of grandeur, delusions of inferiority are kind of like siblings. They're not that different from each other in that from the point of view that it's more constructions. They're kind of assertions of self. Oddly enough, when people are really shy, tends to be a lot of self there. A lot of assertion of self, a certain kind. So the karmic life is often involves assertion of self, a building of self, acting with the self. The dharmic life is a life that understands how all this works well enough that it recognizes the constructions, and it recognizes clinging, grasping. It recognizes greed, hate, and delusion. Has developed the capacity, the mindfulness, the presence, not only to see these operate, but also to know that they're not worthwhile. It's not something to base one's life on. And sometimes we have to see this over and over again. One of the benefits from daily meditation, frequent meditation, frequent retreats, is to really start seeing how this works in the mind over and over and over again. And to meet it over and over and over again with beneficial conditions, transformative conditions, kindness, compassion, peacefulness, safety. And it's a gradual path. Please don't be looking for the instant enlightenment for yourself. That if you used to have this big bang enlightenment, all your problems will go away. And your story will end, and they lived happily ever after. It's a gradual path. Slowly we develop the understanding, the insight. Slowly we become more and more familiar with release. Each of you has had some liberation this retreat, some release, something let go of. Maybe you didn't let go, but something let go. And you probably didn't think very, you probably appreciated it, maybe. You're calmer, more settled, less preoccupied about some of the things you were caught with 2 weeks ago. Maybe it was only 5 minutes Wednesday morning while you're having your tea, but still, it was something. And it's really good to appreciate that, to value it. Oh, and get familiar. So living a dharmic life is a life that begins understanding how the game is played. So it's with wisdom that we can choose a different way, the dharmic way. And it comes from appreciating, valuing, non-clinging, non-grasping. And the life that flows from that. And it's a life that I think is often characterized by not by asserting oneself, but rather being available. It's not assertion, it's availability. We're available to life, including available to our inner life. We're available to our neighbors, available to how things unfold. Available to pick up the bird that's been injured and take it to the vet. Available to then take it out to the field and release it. We're available for circumstances as they unfold to respond appropriately, to respond how it should be. A life of being available and not rather than assertive. And this idea of the bird flying off. The bird, when he flaps up in the air, doesn't leave a trail. There's no traces left behind in the air, in the sky. The karmic life leaves lots of traces. The dharmic life, because there's no attachment, doesn't leave traces in the psyche, in the mind, in the heart. The heart, the mind, can stay traceless. It can stay vast and open, spacious like the sky, available. For all things, having space for all things, vast room where everything that is important, everything that really exists, has a place, respectfully for us to be available for and responsive to. Wise about, caring about, compassionate. So a life, your life can be rooted in karma or rooted in liberation, release. And it makes a world of difference which you choose. And the choice is yours. Your liberation is already here. Don't miss it. Thank you all.